Welcome back. If any of you had or are having technical difficulties, I encourage you to contact Bob or Zach at another time to try to figure that out. They've been very helpful to people. Let's see. First of all, I want to go around and just greet everybody by name. Just a reminder, if you're not familiar with Zoom or you've forgotten, there are two different views. There's a gallery view and a speaker view, and you can toggle between the two. So you either move your cursor or touch your screen, and one of the options should be gallery view or speaker view. So if you do gallery view, you can see a maximum number of people, which on a phone is like 4 people, on a tablet's 9, on a laptop is like 12 or 16. So might want to check that out. So because even I can't see everybody at once, there's 25 of us on here. So I will just greet people by name. That's hello to James, hello to Shree. Hello to Janelle and Linda, Shoketsu, Coral and Carson, Joan, Franklin, who looks like he's in Mexico, even though he's not, Claudia, Gathel, Susan, who I know has not been able to say anything, but I hope that she can hear us, Mark, Bob, Jinryu, Yeshe, Jeff, Karen, Rick, Jill, Cinda, Nyoju, Krista, Ava, Drew, and Paul. I think that's everybody. Because sometimes sometimes people shift around on the screen, so it's hard to keep track. But I think that's everybody. Welcome. So just a few announcements. We have quite a lot of online practice going on right now, as I think many of you are aware. If you want to know more, at the very top menu of the website, there's a link that online practice, and that lists all the stuff that we have online right now, which is obviously Tuesday evening and Sunday morning, but also Wednesday through Saturday morning, Zazen. And also, I'm probably going to be starting a Sangha meeting, just an open Sangha meeting on Saturday mornings from 9:30 to 10:30. So same time as like our once a month Sangha tea happens. But I will commit to being there, and hopefully, and it'll just be just like our Sangha teas. People, you just show up, bring some tea if you want, and we will talk about, you know, practice, but in a very informal, open way. We won't have a set agenda or anything. It also is just a way to check in and have some more social contact with people if you want. This Saturday from 10 till noon, there is a, so let's see, how does that work? I guess Sangha tea doesn't happen on the same day as poetry group. All right. Well, we'll figure it out for this Saturday, because there's a poetry group from 10 to noon that is also wants to meet online. So we'll figure that out.
Wait,
don't you?
Yeah.
We're not meeting.
Oh, you're not meeting this Saturday?
Because people didn't want to or weren't set up or something.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I'm sad to hear that, but it won't conflict with Sangha tea anyway.
Well, the thing is that some, like Ruth Ann is the big participant and she can't do it. And Marta just suggested that we write poems and exchange them online. Yeah. Well, at least for this time. We'll see what happens next month.
Okay. I also have another Zoom room that people can use. So that's also an option.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And then we are forming a Sangha support network. We have a group of about 6 or 7 volunteers at this point who are going to be talking amongst themselves about the best way to, you know, receive requests from people or, you know, kind of keep track of who's willing and able to volunteer. I know a lot of people have said they're willing to help, even though they can't necessarily, you know, leave their house or they have to be careful of their own, you know, health or quarantine or whatever. But there are many things that we can do, even just like, you know, calling one another on the phone, et cetera, that, you know, we can do to help. So stay tuned for that. And then just a quick review of Zoom stuff before we get to class. I think everybody seems to get the hang of staying muted unless you're going to talk, just because otherwise we end up with a lot of background noise. And this might sound funny, but I try to stay kind of more or less still. And if you're going to be walking around, especially if you have a phone and it's going to be going like this, or you've got kids running in and out or something, just turn your video off. We can still see that you're here. Although it's nice to have your video on if you're willing. Let's see. And if you need to, you want to say something or you have a concern or whatever, one of your controls on your Zoom screen is chat. If you touch the screen or you move your cursor around, it's a little talk bubble. And if you click on that, you can type into the screen and it'll come up like on my screen and I can see what you're saying. I don't know if anybody's heard about this, but I figured I would just mention it that given the widespread use of Zoom now, there's a phenomenon called Zoom bombing, where trolls will just like kind of take over the screen, or on their own video they will start airing pornography for all of our benefit and disrupt things. So anyway, I have disabled screen share, but should you see something weird going on, that is what that chat function will be for. Or for that matter, just unmute yourself and say something in case something weird is going on. Hopefully we won't have any issues. Let's see. I don't know if anybody else has anything to say or announcements that I missed. Generally speaking, most everything has just been postponed given our situation. So let's see. So tonight.
You want to tell them about the hands?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. If somebody's, I am, or somebody else is saying something that you really just agree with or appreciate, you can just go like this. jazz hands, yeah. Just kind of a fun way to just, you know, give more feedback, because a lot of times via video we're all just kind of in passive faces and we can't pick up that same kind of interest from people. So let's see. I guess that's this starting next week and then continuing through all of the precepts, other people are teaching the precepts. The senior students are teaching the precepts, but nobody stepped forward for do not misuse sexuality. So that's, I'm teaching that one tonight. Just as a heads up, later on, so what I'm going to do is to have little presentation and reading, and then I'm going to break us up into groups to discuss a question. I'm going to break people into groups twice tonight with a little bit of presentation in between and after. And my plan is, now this isn't going to work for Coral and Carson. My plan is to break people into gender-specific groups. Because frankly, a lot of times discussions of this precept, I think, might be a tad inhibited because we're really just not used to discussing them in mixed gendered groups. And I think as long as we're online, let's take this opportunity. But what I did want to, the reason I'm mentioning it ahead of time is just if there's anybody here who identifies as a gender that's, I might not guess, and you please, in the chat, you can chat to me privately. If you hit the chat, you'll see it's usually defaults to everyone, but if you click on it, you can choose one person to send a message to. So if for some reason you want to be in a group that you aren't obviously belong to by your name or obvious appearance, just let me know. And maybe Coral and Carson, I don't know, if you want to, like, one of you hook up by a phone or something. It's up to you how you want to do it. Okay. So, getting started. So, this is Do Not Misuse Sexuality Reign, Faithful in Relationships. In the realm of the ungilded Dharma, not coveting or creating a veneer of attachment is the precept of not misusing sexuality. The three wheels are pure and clear. When there is nothing to desire, we follow the way of all Buddhas. So what do we mean by sexuality? Sex plus all the emotional, behavioral, cultural stuff that goes along with it. So if any of you have heard my presentation on this precept before, you might have remembered me sharing this source. I don't know how I happened upon this book. It's called Being Sexual and Celibate. It's by a Capuchin monk. And it's just this really sweet little book about sexuality, and he's a celibate priest. So very interesting kind of person to explore this. So I just wanted to share his view of sexuality. So I said, I now regard my human sexuality as all those activities which stem from or lead to the gratification of my biological urges and emotional drives, and which stem from and lead to the fulfillment of my personal need for intimacy. Those activities which stem from and lead to the fulfillment of my personal need for intimacy, I regard as the specifically human aspects of my sexuality. Sexuality is a much more pervasive reality in human life than most people I have spoken with seem to believe. Having taken considerable time to reflect rather seriously on our experiences has led me and some close friends to suspect that our sexuality is much more pervasive of our lives than we first imagined. Now, I'm not thinking of those biological and biopsychological aspects of human sexuality when I tell myself that human sexuality is more pervasive than most people appreciate. I am referring to the pervasive influence of that in human sexuality, which makes it specifically human, our need for intimacy. The insistence of this need for fulfillment and the havoc wreaked when it is not met explains to me much of human interaction. So elsewhere he talks about essentially looking at this kind of energy as being the energy that draws us together. So you know, all the way from the beginning of our lives where we're separated from our mothers and we want that human connection for our survival, to all the kind of relationships that we form over time, and then kind of a physical sexual relationship. It's just kind of one of those relationships but that it's all partakes of the same kind of energy. I just think about our, if we didn't have this attraction to one another, sexual and otherwise, I don't know that we'd be able to put up with one another. Like, we have this need for companionship and intimacy and belonging and recognition and all these things, but you know, almost as much repels us at times. You know, it's very challenging to get along with people. It's most of us have issues with our parents. We, you know, there's you know, we're all neurotic and annoying in our own ways. But like there's this tension where we nonetheless we are attracted to one another. So I don't know. I've invited people to do this before, where you take the precepts and essentially translate them into your own words. You know, what does this precept really mean to you? So I just, you know, I think maybe there's just limitations to English, or maybe, you know, the formation of this precept early on in Buddhism was a little too narrow, but I kind of like this one, this version. Do not misuse the energy of attraction. Remain faithful in relationships. So this definitely includes sexual attraction, romantic relationships, etc., definitely. But also thinking of those other relationships in our lives, parents, children, spouses, siblings, close friends, our longing for closeness, our disappointment when that closeness isn't, our need for closeness isn't met, you know, and in what ways that's kind of similar in some ways to even sexual attraction. So in breaking us into groups, which I'm not able to do quite that elegantly yet, I guess I'm giving you the question, which I will also put in a chat for everyone, is you know, what is sexuality, and or do you see this energy of attraction? Does this kind of approach to the precept make any sense to you in terms of this energy of attraction that we have, and how central it is to our lives? Then the next time we break out, we'll be talking about how we might break this precept, in what ways we might break it, and in what ways we can keep it. So we'll kind of be getting to that later, but in a way I thought we'd just kind of focus on what is it? What is sexuality? So you should be receiving invitations to breakout rooms.
Could you please tell me, I'll repeat the question or send it now? For this session. Yes.
I'm not sure. I think once you get into a breakout room, you won't be able to see the chat anymore. I'll have to send a message to like all breakout rooms at once. But the question is essentially, you know, what is sexuality? Is there a way that this precept could be speaking of something beyond just, you know, our typical concept of physical sexual attraction? All right, so I'm going to make two rooms. It would have been easier to just move the men into a different room. Okay. And Let's see. And let's see, where's James? There's James. So you should be in breakout room one. Oh, I haven't made him yet. Okay. There we go. Time to give a fair treatment of the subject. So to continue exploring the precept further. So there's in the commentary part, in the realm of the ungilded Dharma, not coveting or creating a veneer of attachment is the precept of not misusing sexuality. So covet is to yearn to possess or have something. So obviously this could be a relationship with a person that we can have, maybe we can't, wanting to possess someone perhaps, envy, jealousy, control, lack of boundaries. And a veneer is an attractive appearance that covers or disguises someone or something's true nature or feelings. So the example that springs to my mind is acting in a way that looks like love or regard when we really just want, we want something from the other person, whether that's sexual gratification or adoration or, you know, building up our ego because of their attention, etc. So what ways do we use sex or sexuality selfishly? And some of you may have been getting into that already. So this is just my brainstorm list, and then I will break us up again. Seduction, sense of power through that, flirting inappropriately, perhaps outside a relationship or with everyone nonstop. Seen that before as well. Perhaps building an ego or one's sense of worthiness or attractiveness. Not to say that flirting is always bad, just that it can have that tone. Taking advantage of someone through their attraction to us. Judging others based on on their level of attractiveness, sexual or otherwise. Building our own self-worth based strongly on our own attractiveness, sexual or otherwise. Convincing ourselves or others that we love someone and care about their well-being when we are mostly just involved for the sake of the feeling or experience it gives us. Taking a serious risk of hurting someone emotionally or psychologically in order to enjoy sexual romantic relations with them. Say, you know, you're uncommitted, but one person is more attached. You kind of know that their feelings are going to get hurt, but just go ahead anyway. And of course, betraying trust in relationships, marriage, committed relationships, parent-child relationships, teacher-student friendship, in order to satisfy your own desires. For me, I think this is one, you know, this is a classic example of where Zen teachers have, you know, they just indulged themselves in sexual relationships with students, thinking, you know, they've got it under control, or it doesn't really matter, or, you know, they kind of justify it for themselves without taking into account that if and when this comes out, it's actually going to hurt the entire Sangha. So that's just my brainstorm. So breaking into groups again, what does it mean to break this precept? And what does it mean to keep it? And if you want to go into the exact same groups, give me jazz hands. And if you want me to break it into smaller groups, don't give me jazz hands. So do you want to go in the same groups? Okay, it looks like people are okay with the same groups. That's the easiest thing, so I will just do that. You can give me feedback later, and I will move Carson to the other group. All right, I think all the breakout rooms are closed. All right, so just a few minutes left. I want to close with Clark's suggestion for what real intimacy is. And he, it's his opinion, being a celibate monk who's talked with people, a lot of people about this, and that I think this makes sense to people. Genital sex and romantic activity can take place without intimacy, and intimacy can be experienced and expressed without genital or romantic behavior. So this is actually a friend of his. They were talking about intimacy. So his friend said, "I know a moment of intimacy has been reached when I am no longer preoccupied by concern about the other person's judgment or critique of what I share. Ironically, a moment of intimacy occurs when I have been with a person long enough to discover that there are differences between us. In intimacy, I never want to harm, manipulate, or try to convince someone of anything beyond what I believe is good for that person. Intimacy is possible only after you have known a person long enough that you can affirm him or her concretely because of your appreciation of that person's gifts. The affirmed knows that for the time being, the one who is affirming regards him or her as the most important person there is. But then there is the assumption that after this moment, both will carry on independently. In this moment of time, no other preoccupation or person is as important as you and your well-being. There is an unself-conscious realization that after this time, other people and other concerns will preoccupy both of us. And that realization contributes to the giving process. A moment of intimacy occurs when the goal of life's deepest pursuit is surprisingly met. But having reached that goal, the moment remains intimate only with the willingness on the part of each to surrender what has been achieved." So I feel like this flows very sweetly into the second sentence of our commentary. The three wheels are pure and clear. So the three wheels are giver, receiver, and gift, or the kind of the actor, the thing or one acted upon, and the action. So there's a kind of, oneness and connection there. When there is nothing to desire. So in true intimacy, there's not even really that sense of separation that someone needs to be grasped or held onto or possessed. That the reward is there. And I think for most of us that, sexual experiences are where we end up, especially earlier on in life. Like, that is like the most intimate experience we had, just like, yes. But that ends up being, and again, I was thinking about the precept about intoxication, almost like if that is our sole or primary way to have a sense of intimacy and connection, then it's going to be very limited. Then we're going to be kind of, we'll be using relationships, using people, using sex to satisfy our own desire for intimacy. And then that kind of faithfulness and relationship, that respect, the real intimacy will be missing because we're just using people for our own purposes. So I'll leave it at that. Hopefully the conversations were nice. And thanks. You can leave me a little message in the chat. Do you think the rooms should have been smaller or sessions should have been longer or whatever? And all right. Thank you.
Domia, what was the name of the book?
I don't even know if you can get it. Being Sexual and Celibate by Keith Clark.
Okay. All right. I'll try to look for it.
Thank you all. Take care.